So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 33. My name is Mike Fisher. My new co-host, still here, is Maricela.
Still here, going strong, wearing green in uniform.
I missed the memo today.
And excited for today's conversation.
Our guest today.
I didn't think he liked what I said.
Our guest today is Randy Fornoff, president at MTS Painting and Property Services. And I didn't clarify, but you're out in Arizona, right?
Yes, Mesa, Arizona, right outside of Phoenix.
Yeah, we are covering the country. We had a couple from Texas in the past, mainly in California, but now we're in Arizona. I love it.
I do love it.
Making our way across the country.
Diversified.
Sure. So let's get into your story a little bit, Randy. How did you get into this? What led you to where you are now with MTS Painting?
Well, cool. I'm from Buffalo, New York originally, and I moved out here right after college, got married, actually moved out here for construction out to Arizona. Wasn't much construction. And so in Buffalo, you know, there was, but, you know, I wanted to go out to see where it really flies out there. And my cousin helped set me up. I was first from the family to come out here other than my cousin. But, and so that was in 1980. And so it was a long time ago. So I've been out here about 42 years. And so really it's my home now. Listen, I love Arizona. It's awesome. Hot, but awesome. Mm. Of course, everywhere is hot right now, isn't it?
In
California anyways, it seems like it.
Yeah.
And so this is normal for us. Quit whining, you know, 110.
Oh my goodness.
Come on.
Oh my goodness. Don't get me started, Randy.
We got to do it for 5 months. And so we have to motivate employees.
No.
We can talk about that later. But, so MTS is MTS Painting and Property Services is my three sons is what the MTS stands for. So my dad moved out here a few years after me and started what really was a commercial landscape company. I had a different name and stuff like that. But he started that. I brought in the painting about 3-4 years later. I worked for what we call out here HOAs, so homeowners association or management companies. I worked for them directly. I was doing the painting for them. And I built up a crew underneath the management company. Well, it became a conflict of interest at some point. Here they are managing the property. And they're doing the painting contracting, and so it became a conflict. So he sold the whole company or all the tools and equipment, $500 I bought it from him, sprayers, ladders, everything, and brought it into my dad's company and started building it up. And then we eventually switched over the name to MTS Painting because I worked with my two brothers. So it's my dad's three sons is where it fits into play. At this point, that went for many years, and we built up this company slowly, never worked for another painting company. We're homegrown. We designed our own painting systems and, you know, all of our own standards. And, you know, I say standards, but internal standards on how to do it. And eventually I started taking over the office work, you know,
Randy, let me ask you. You moved from Buffalo to Arizona in 1980, and you said you finished college, and you came with the intention of pursuing construction. Was your pursuit, was it always that entrepreneurial spirit, going to go start my own company? Is that who you were, or were you just exploring the great frontier in Arizona?
Good question.
What was your heart?
Never wasn't that developed in my thinking, you could say. Mm-hmm. I was falling into things still. You know, wherever I could fall into, whatever my talent seemed to work at. So no, not an entrepreneur spirit at first. I didn't know I had that.
Okay.
Wasn't thinking management, wasn't thinking that. I was thinking work, support my family. I had a young family at 19. Actually, I would have been 20 at about that point. We started a family early. And so it was survival, you know. So I worked two jobs for a while here in Arizona. You know, I was working 12 hours, come home, collapse, go back and do it again for about a year. And, you know, and it developed it from there. And, you know, swung a hammer for about a year.
Do you come from a, do you come from, so your father came out a few years later. Does he, did he come from a small business entrepreneurial background, or did he start that when he came to Arizona?
Nope, not at all. He worked for Friedman Singer
this
Machines.
This is a new
Yeah, you guys are, this is first generation entrepreneurship, huh?
First generation entrepreneurship.
And
I really wanted to underscore that and highlight that, because I think a lot of people in the construction industry, there's certainly a lot of people that I've met that have inherited businesses, but there's a lot more that I mean, we're first generation entrepreneurs. And so we're learning it all. So I really wanted to highlight that.
Exactly. And we never thought of ourselves as entrepreneurs at all. We were more manager. My dad was more of a management style, a manager. He could do that. But entrepreneur and thinking of systems and stuff like that and moving the ball forward and upward, that wasn't his thing. And that's what I brought to it. Not on purpose, just out of need. You know, he kept saying at the end of the year, how come we never make any money? You know, I'm going, well, where's this money coming from? And so I started stepping into it and then using some of my college. And then really, I just dove into trade associations, construction magazines, self-taught type stuff, you know, and did some experimenting out there and just built it between us a family. Now, we had an advantage. We had four people that think the same. Right? My dad, three brothers.
What do you mean?
We could finish
each other's
sentences.
I mean, that's not a guarantee, though, right? I mean,
that's not a guarantee. I'd like, what do you mean?
Agree.
What do you mean three brothers agree? Let's stop.
Right? Now, I'm not talking in the office. I'm talking in the field at this point. We're our only crew. It's the four of us. You know, dad was a little bit more in the office. But we could, you know, when we walked back to the truck, we were grabbing tools for all three of us. You know, we knew what to do next. Each one of us was that kind of thinker and that kind of doer, right? And so we're super efficient. Mm. I mean, we could paint the buildings and, you know, it was unbelievable how fast and efficient we became. And so, you know, that's what our key was at first. We could be very profitable because of that, because we're all working in the field. Now, as we started growing and getting up to, you know, 300,000, you know, 500,000, things start to change, and I recognize that. Now, my brothers didn't. They were very good in the field, and I let them stay there, and they didn't have much jealousy about it either. It was a blessing. It was huge. And then, you know, then I started setting up the systems and the bookkeeping systems and stuff like that, you know, and scheduling and all kinds of things there, and building that myself, kind of built my own position in the office, which is nice when it's 110 degrees
and
out.
And you said you went to college, right? But, I mean, where did you learn? And how did you go about setting those systems up and setting those different back office structure up efficiently? You know what I mean? If one, nobody in the family's really ever done it, you didn't really have any experience doing it. Obviously, it needed to be done, right? So there was a little bit of that need, right? That drove the you know, being able to get it done. But was there any sort of learning, or where did you go outside to kind of find how to do that kind of stuff?
Especially in the 80s, you didn't have the internet.
YouTube didn't
exist, you didn't have
right?
the internet. Yeah. We did have the PDCA, it was called back then, the PCA, Painting Contractors Association. Still, you know, actually, they call it the longest running trade association out of all the trades, continuous running since 1884. Mm. It's never stopped. And so it's a fantastic thing. So I picked up on that, and I learned from them on a nationally and smart. All the literature and stuff they put out. So really, to answer your question, it was developing things by the hard knocks, you know, learning the hard way, you know, losing money at things, you know, causing problems out in the field or not connecting, communicating properly in the field with customers, with field guys, you know, with my brothers, say, you know, us in the office. But picking up and then learning the actual mechanics of bookkeeping and stuff like that. We just had a great bookkeeper that we trusted, you know, and had great conversations with, and would help us and guide us along. So having Lyle, his name was Lyle way back then. My dad had him for years. He did our personal taxes. He did the company tax. We did the debt monthly, though. He never helped us monthly. It's not like we took a shoebox to them and said, here's our monthly receipts and stuff.
So
you know, I've heard of guys doing that. You know, we didn't ever did that. We did it. I share the story. I don't think I have the picture handy, but I have a picture of me sitting in front of a Mac Plus. So an Apple Mac computer, 12-inch screen, and I built an Excel spreadsheet on that thing, or it was a spreadsheet. I don't know if it was Excel. That when you taped it up,
MS-DOS?
It went about 20 foot around the wall when I printed it out. And that was per job. Oh, it handled every single tax. It handled every single payroll tax. It handled every cost involved. And I knew my net profit on every job. I projected my overhead.
That's impressive
at an
that
overhead
point.
Percentage.
I mean, that's easy now, right? I mean, there's mid-80s. So much technology now, but to be able to figure that out.
Mike, it's easy now, and there's still contractors
you're
that
right.
aren't doing
you're
that.
Right.
Yep. Isn't that amazing?
It's way easier to do. Let's park there for a little bit. Why was that so important to you? And if you could, you know, encourage anyone listening who isn't looking at their net profitability or have their eye on that, like, how do they get started? Why is it important? What do they need to do?
Exactly.
How did you know so early on to do that?
Right. Well, two things. So let me go back to Mike's question, and it's going to partially answer that. I came out of carpentry, so I was swinging a hammer, building a hotel, that type thing here out in Phoenix. And then the job ended. It was kind of weird. It ended abruptly. The contractor I was working for came out and said, job's over. They won't pay us anymore. We're done. We're walking. I'm going, okay, I need a job. And so I just looked at him. I said that. And he says, well, what do you got in your belt? What's your experience? I told him I took some college. I said, you know, I'm sharp on this. I'm great with numbers. He says, I'm starting a new carpentry business. I want you to come with me. I'm going to teach you how to do estimating. So 1 year business, we did over $1 million. This was carpentry, commercial carpentry estimating. We did office warehouses, basically. Mm-hmm. So panelized roof systems. I don't know if they're used all around the country. They are here in the Southwest. Yep. And so I was the bidder. I bought the plans, and he taught me how to do it, but he taught me the spreadsheet that he used. So this guy was sharp. He knew his numbers. He knew his overhead. He knew he had a system down for estimating, and he taught it to me. I still have my briefcase at home with that spreadsheet that he taught me off of, and I adapted it into the digital age. And so I do digital estimating. I've done digital estimating for a long time. I actually teach classes on estimating through the PCA, and I've taught tons of people around the country for Sherwin-Williams and through the PCA. And so,
Randy, tell us what digital bidding is, digital estimating.
Spreadsheet estimating is my shortcut term. So in other words, I go out and measure a building, and I plug it into a spreadsheet. It tells me the square footage of coverage I'm going, and then I apply production rates. And so that's pretty much my estimating class. And so I'm using production rates. Go ahead.
Is that something that... like a single trade contractor should be using? And is that something that a multiple trade general contractor can be using? Is that transferable across all trades?
I would say yes. I stay away, and this is going to be a little bit of a sidebar. I stay away from general contracting. I mean, I could be, I have enough knowledge to build a house, to build a building. It's just, we don't even work for general contractors, to tell you the truth. We do everything repaint. I didn't talk about that, but we don't even work for general contractors. For one reason, they can't schedule us. We run a rigid, we're out a month and a half. I can't stop at one job for a good customer to go to this job. We run a schedule. I don't know how they do it. How do you do 16 trays or 16 different aspects, and then all of a sudden the kitchen sink doesn't show up?
With no hair.
What do you do?
Yeah.
And so,
that's how it's done.
So, no thanks. Give me,
and in the wrong color.
I'm going to isolate what we're good at. And that is painting, and it really is repainting. We work for owners and managers, and buildings owners, you know, residential, commercial, HOA, homeowners association. So we work for managers and homeowners for the most part. Everything's repainting. Mm. And so we have a lot of customer interfacing. And so back to your estimating question. So we're using production rates. I'm using the square footage or lineal footage of items. I measure all that off. We have a quick system doing it. And we have it's really one-step estimating, but modified. One step comes out of the painting industry. One of my fellow contractors out of L.A., actually, Josh Abramson out of, I can't think of his company name at the moment, a great guy. He built an estimating system. I've adapted it over the years with his permission. But so it's a spreadsheet that automates, and then it sets things up and adds up. And so I always say there's three ways of estimating. I can do the spreadsheet estimating, right? I can do, you know, per square foot, and I always use surface to be painted square foot, not floor square footage. Mm-hmm. I don't paint floors. Well, I do a little, but I don't estimate by floor square footage because a two-story building makes it totally different, right? For example.
Yeah.
And then so I will have that on the side, though. I'll do some comparisons to square footage of surface to be painted. And then the third way, and this is, I always share this in my estimating classes, you stand back and look at the building and say, yep, that's about $4,500. You know, so you do it three different ways. You
double check. You've been doing it for 40-some years,
right? That's the Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Right.
That's the Wild Wild West of doing it. Still.
Exactly. Now, I've handed this system off four different times to my brother, Jason. Mm. I've handed it off to Matt. He's here wandering around the office. Josh, my eldest son, he knows the estimating system. I think that's it. I think it's just there. And so I've been able to hand it. In other words, why do you have an estimating system? That's so you're consistent in your bidding.
Same done,
right?
Yeah. Same every time.
You want to be consistent house to house, building to building. There should be consistency in your pricing. And so that's why. And then you want it handled offable so that I'm not doing it. I'm getting ready to retire. I want to retire in the next 5 years. All right. So I'm getting ready to hand it off to the third generation, Josh, my son. We're going to exchange shares this year. And so it's exciting.
Wow.
We can talk about exit planning too. But, and so that estimating system allows me to delegate.
I'm just going to sit here in my green. Just keep telling
them. Careful, don't get me going. You're going to have to cut me off someplace.
I'm going to reel you in. I'll keep reeling you in.
So estimating system, and so I would definitely suggest that for anybody. Now, what I do with that also, so you get this. So I know exactly what my gross profit is going to be or what my labor and my materials are going to be on the job. Now I got to figure out my overhead. Half the contractors don't know what their overhead percentage is, right?
Yeah.
And so where do you base your overhead percentage on? We could talk hours on that too. But, you know, I base it on my field labor. If you guys are familiar enough with business, I don't know your businesses, but you might understand what I'm talking about. So we don't base it on sales. It's not, which would be about 50% of sales would be our overhead. I got six people in here. Well, two are part-time. Running $1.5 million company, right? We support our crews greatly. My crews start here every morning. They're prepared fully. They're super efficient in the field. That's how we choose to run a business. We don't start them at the job site. They're here prepared. And so that's a different way of doing it. And so that's why I need this office staff to have them fully prepared all the way through. Of course, we got marketing at $1.5 million. We're actually 1.6 we're going to hit this year. And so we need to have all these support services. And what was I get? Oh, that's
what's
all
your
overhead.
Average job size, Randy? What's your average job size, and how quickly are you having a turn?
It's been at about 4,500 to 5,000 somewhere. This year, it's going to jump up a lot.
That's a lot of clients. Well, okay, no. How much are those projects for the same associations or client versus all the other like homeowners?
That's actually, now you're getting tricky on there. So the math is going to get weird. I haven't figured it out for this year, and we've expanded on our contract size because we've landed a lot of HOA jobs, $125,000 jobs, $150,000. It's been awesome this year. And so we've been very blessed. I think what it is my fellow contract painters out there have finally raised their prices because of the supply issues and the price increases. So they're finally raising their labor too. And where I do every year automatically, there's another note for your contractors out there. Raise your prices every year. Costs don't go down. They go up. Every year I give raises.
Well, don't get me started, but I'm going to ask you a question. Do you give free estimates?
Yes.
Marcel loves this one.
We still do.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Now, I've debated this question for years. We got a guy in the PCA that talks about, I charge them $100. They get it back if they give us a job. And so are we out there to consult, or are we out there to estimate? Do we want tire kickers or not? I'm at a 33% close rate. If I was worse than that, we qualify big time. We qualify our customers. And we will do phone bids
before
first.
You do the estimate. Before you do the estimate, you're already qualifying them. You're not just we'll come out there and then we'll qualify.
Important.
Oh yeah,
that's important.
I was going to say that that might be that might be an okay way to can we approve that, Marticella? Can we approve that way?
I approve that. I totally do. You know, one of the things that I've talked about a lot or enough of, and Mike's going to get sick of this conversation by the end of this month, is how you know, how important and how valuable, Randy, your time is.
Yeah.
And how the market right now, it's really interesting how they expect for your time to be free when you're going through that bidding and estimating process. Exactly. And I don't think enough people are talking about how valuable that time is, but nobody in our, and it's really hard to find people in our industry that are like, I'm going to put a dollar sign to that time and you'll get it back because there's not enough people raising their prices every year to pay their people more. And just to educate homeowners, I think homeowners just also don't know how much time goes into a single trade contract, a paint, if you're a painter, a plumber, an electrician, and especially if you're a general contractor, where we have 15 different trades to bid out. So that's, I like to engage in those conversations because I think this is where we move the industry a little bit more forward and we have those conversations.
So while you guys are,
you're qualified.
Well, you guys are playing your little violins about being in the contractor space and doing free estimates real quick.
Mike, I am so sorry.
I have to let you know that my industry is probably worse, right? I do insurance. We do hours and hours and hours and months of work, and then we might not even get your business and we don't get paid at all. So. It's out there in every industry for sure, right? I mean, there's that.
You have it worse. But Mike, look, this is what I'm going to say, and this is something that Randy talked about, is that you're qualifying. Right. And so I know you cast a wide net, and I know that's important, and we all have to cast our nets to a certain degree. But there's this qualifying process. And, like, we have to be okay saying no to the people that don't line up with the values of our business, right?
Exactly.
Well, it sounds like we go back to your business increasing this year, right? And you said it was because people are finally raising your rates, which I assume means that you're becoming more competitive, right? Like you've stayed steady at a certain level and like you said, raising your rates every year. And now finally people are starting to get a little bit underwater and they're finally raising their rates and you're becoming competitive again. I guess my question is then, how did you survive for so long when everybody was undercutting you? How did you stay alive and retain business and grow it, even if you did, if everybody's out there undercutting you, and on the flip side of that, what does the next 3 to 5 years look like if you're gaining that much traction now?
Yeah, good question. And so I would say because of the quality work, because we follow through and we control our field or control our quality, maybe might be another way of saying it. I noticed that, or I figured that out about 15, 20 years ago when my brothers, or when I was coming out of the field, and there was less of my brothers influencing the job, all of a sudden I did notice that we were dropping off on customers and going, and it was because our quality wasn't following through. Because like I said before, me and the brothers knew what to do in the next second. We knew the quality thing to do, the next great thing to do, try to train that to somebody else, try to train common sense. We always had a huge argument about common sense within our family. Because we applied
it too
much.
Because it's not so common, is it?
Yeah, it's not so common. Well, Dad would always say, well, there's a right way to do it. And then we'd say, no, Dad, there's two ways to do it, and they both can be right. And it was a terrible argument. Every once in a while, my sisters would have fun. I'm the eldest out of seven. And so family was interesting.
Yes. It
was tight family.
My kind of family.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And so I got seven grandkids now. I got eight kids myself. And so it's a ball.
You have eight children?
Yeah, three.
Randy,
three and three, and then two together.
Kid.
Yeah, Brady Bunch plus two.
Right.
It's so it was.
But Randy, you raised a family as a young entrepreneur, and that is to be celebrated. You did you had a small business, so that's like a ninth child, and your first child.
Yeah.
Like that's an incredible amount of responsibility. Like you did it, Randy. Congratulations.
And really my dad, I got to give my dad responsibility for that. His theory was 40 hours a week, go home to your family. I want you rested up. I want you to go back to your family's more important. And it was always dad's thing was to have all his children working for us. He wanted us to all live on the same cul-de-sac. We all went, oh no. But that was his dream. you know? So to hand it off to the third generation, this is super celebration. Dad's still, he's back in Buffalo right now. He's flying back in the next couple of days here, 87 years old. I mean, he's still, you know, awesome. Tight family. It's awesome. I forget where we were.
You know, Randy, that's the beautiful thing in this conversation. Neither do we. We just kind of go with the flow. We're hanging out at a coffee house here talking. I think that's one of the big, that was the most attractive thing for me in coming into this line of, and then this industry, is that I could come in, work, and still be a mom. I could drop my kids off and I could pick them up and I could be at all of their games. But I can't do that if I'm saying yes to every client. I can't do that if I am not putting value and dollars to my time, right? If I'm saying yes to everything and my net is so wide and I'm just saying hello to, it's going to swallow me up. So it's understanding what the values are, what the standards are of your business, and who you should be working with. And so I'm going to bring it back into like your client relations, because if you're 1.6 million and your average job size is 4,500, those are a lot of people to make happy in your clients, right? So like, do you have a client? Wow.
That many jobs.
I don't want to do 350 of anything in a year. Nothing. Literally nothing.
That's a lot.
We love it.
That's a lot of personality.
Three, four, five jobs a different, maybe even six sometimes. Different jobs per week.
So how many crews do you have? How many crews do you have?
Three, four, five, depends, two-man or three-man crews. That's why we start here every morning, because the assistant job lead here, or the ops manager, he decides that in the moment, you know, especially with absenteeism and everything else. It's been since COVID, everybody thinks they deserve a day off and to be paid for.
And a trophy for it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, so that's how we run multiple crews, multiple jobs. We switch it off. We're able to move things around enough to keep all of our customers happy. Back to that, you know, you were talking about, you know, your minimum job, or, you know, they're charging for estimates. No, we don't do that. But, you know, when people say, oh, do you do small jobs? Yes. But our minimum's 150 plus material. Why? Why so much? Hold it. When was the last time you took your car to a dealer?
$150?
You took your car to the dealer. Yeah, $142 an hour, my mechanic is, that I take my trucks to, and I took my truck to him. Hold it. I'm coming to your door with my truck full of tools with two guys in it. $150 is cheap.
I was going to say, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my word.
So we explain it. And so back to Mike's, partially to Mike's question, you know, what kind of customer we're after. We're after that more detailed customer. That's what got us through. People that want it done right the first time. People that want the expertise, you know, at 40 years of experience in this stuff, I got a lot of expertise and I share it, you know, and I, you know, if they don't want that, that's fine. I'm not going to cry over it. Yeah. You know, we got a 33% close rate, you know, I'm going to lose 2/3. We all know that in sales, you know, we're not going to get every job. I don't want every job. And so we just go after those customers that we think are, you know, are fit. And if we're taking a phone call and they, you know, they sound like a tire kicker. We ask them for their address. We look it up on Google Maps. I can do a lot of measuring and all parking from Google Maps.
Yeah.
In fact, I do all my measuring from Google Maps. We do for all of our measuring.
Oh, wow.
We still go to the job and meet the customer. I'm not saying, you know, I still got to go touch it. I got to see if it's chalky. I got to see if it's peeling under here. I got to see how crowded it is.
And the dry rot. Yeah.
Right. Plus, meet the customers to interface with the customers, see what kind of customer we're running into. You know, is it a... You know, do I have both of them there? You know, the whole customer sales thing too. And so
Randy, let's talk about clients, and let's talk about homeowners, because sometimes homeowners don't know what it is to be a good client or what it is to be a bad client. They just don't know. Yeah. What would you say in what you do, what makes a good homeowner a good client for you? And then I want you to tell me what makes a homeowner a bad client. Like what should homeowners not be doing?
That's a good question. I kind of explained, you know, kind of our ideal client, you know, somebody detailed, not over detailed, you know, we can talk about horror stories. We have those too, of course, you know, or it's the ones that change, you know, in the middle of the job, you know, all of a sudden the husband gets involved at the end of the job and he's an inspector, you know, and he's expecting everything and expecting the house to be brand new again. Hold it. We do repaints. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a perfect you know, science here.
Yes.
And, you know, think about general contracting. You guys must use that term all the time. It's not a perfect science. Yeah. That plumbing isn't lined up right. That, you know, toilet doesn't line up because I'm not going to change the concrete, you know, underneath.
Yeah, because I couldn't move the oak tree. Excuse me.
Exactly. And so, yeah, with the clients like that, that's most of the time what we're looking for. But we'll, you know, we deal with all kinds, you know, it's funny, you know, you guys have done it too, where all of a sudden, you know, especially when you get into color out there and, you know, and you've got the homeowner going and all of a sudden they start arguing about color, the husband and wife. It's like, hold it. You almost got to turn into a marriage counselor, you know. You know, there's a couple of tricks. There's a couple of tricks we do. Even in our sales and in our qualifying, I just did it yesterday in qualifying a customer. And this lady, the way she presented herself on the phone, she was different than the average person. And I was trying to nail it down while I was talking to her. We use a DISC profile. So D-I-S-C, direct, D-I, interactive, C, conscientious, and the S is steady. And so, you know, there's a bunch of different personality tests out there. Well, all of a sudden I identified what she is. I got a cool sheet, actually, I keep it right next to my desk. Comes out of Entree Leadership. So this thing's pretty cool.
Okay.
And so one of the things is, when she got off the phone, it was like at the end, she was real quick. I go, what was that? We got done with all the information and then she was done. I thought she was a talker. She was talking. We were on the phone for like a half an hour. I said, okay, what kind of customer was that? And so we use that in our qualifying. So I wrote down C. It ended up being C, cautious. And so about the telephone, this says call length. Only long enough to give all the facts. Don't try to push her longer than that. Same with the conversation when Matt goes out and visits her to go measure her house and talk about her painting. Don't
So you're passing that information to her. Don't start talking about your dog. That information on the baton.
Yeah, don't start talking about her dog. It's not, she wants to get to the facts.
I like talking about the dogs. I'm that person.
That's so brilliant. Yeah, right? I know it. So like, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're in sales, like doing that is important, right? And I've been taught a lot of those things and
at times
and yeah, and still work with a lot of that stuff kind of in the background, right? But I love that you guys are actually putting pen to paper on it and passing that information along through the sales process so that everybody in your company that interacts with that client knows how they like to be interacted with. And I'm sure you get it wrong sometimes.
Right?
I'm sure you might profile somebody as an I, and they may not be. And all of a sudden, you know, you're going down a path and it might not work out so well. But the fact that you're even putting effort into it, makes you light years ahead of so many other people, especially in the construction industry, right? In the contracting space.
Right.
I feel like this is probably going on in a lot of white collar industries, but this is literally the first I've done 150, almost 200 of these things. I've never heard that from a contractor.
Oh, really?
So it's I love hearing that.
Yeah.
Again, this goes back.
I'm hearing that you're very systems oriented from the start, where you had like a 40 page Excel sheet that talked about all the things of the project. Like it feels like that is one of the roots of who you are. You're very process oriented in an industry where we should be very process oriented and we're not.
Most people just
that
work
really
off the
does
pad.
Give you. Yes. Yep. Yes. That there's lots of leverage in that.
Yeah. Big time.
Exactly. And there's so really, and you asked that question earlier too, you know, why do it that way? Why have the estimating system? Why have every system and processes? Well, a lot of it is to record the data that it comes back in. So I know, or let me maybe share this. When we do invoicing, the invoicing comes to us before it's sent. We're already looking at our job costing. Every job has a job costing on it. The estimator checks off on it. The operations manager checks off on it. And then normally I view it too. Most of the time I do it because in case it's somebody I know and they come up to me in church and say, oh, thanks for painting our house. I got to know that we painted their house, you know? And so, at 350 customers a year, I don't touch every one of those, you know? And so I got to be careful. But all this information is coming back into these systems and into this data. And I use that to make decisions. That's why I want it. The invoice doesn't go out. If I'm seeing a loss or the hours are way over. I'm going, hold it, on this invoice. I'm going, hold it. Do we got a mistake or did we just fail at this job? Was it the estimating that failed? Was it the production people that failed? Maybe we had a brand new guy out there. Maybe a hose broke, you know, and sprayed all over a car. Mm-hmm. Happened about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You know, that type thing.
Shoot.
You know, you have failures there. Or was it the customer from hell? Excuse me, customers, if anybody's watching. Mm-hmm. But some are. There's a customer from hell, and then there's a job from hell. The customer from hell, we don't want those. That's what we try to qualify out. You can't always. You don't always. The job from hell are some jobs just fall apart. You know, hose break.
Yeah.
One thing
you touch this, and it breaks that. And yes.
Yep. Exactly.
Randy, answer the question of like, I have a good idea of who your best kind of clients are, but tell us what a homeowner should not do. Like, what's the worst type of client? And what should homeowners really try and stay away from in working with people in our industry?
Yeah.
In your opinion.
And so, first, yeah, worst ones definitely. The ones that can be scary are the ones that just have never contracted before. And so most of those are okay if they're humble enough to listen to the experts.
I was going to say that. I feel like that might be an okay thing, right? You can kind of teach them how to interact and how it's supposed to work. To an
extent. Yes. I love doing that. You know, people are complaining about millennials and stuff like that, which I don't at all. You know, some of them are just inexperienced. They don't know what to do next. We have employees like that. They simply don't know that they have to show up.
I'm quiet over here.
They simply don't know they have to show up on time. You know, hold it. You know, that's normal to show up on time. That's an employee. I can't say that to a customer.
Okay. Yes.
But anyways, with customers,
I will be humble.
Yeah, as long as they're humble and will listen. Now, here's the next problem. Maybe it's not a first-time buyer and they've been burned. You know, how many people have been burned by contractors too? Or they think they've been burned by a contractor.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe they're over picky or maybe they didn't choose the right color and they're blaming the contractor.
Randy, I really like that you said that. They think they have been burned.
Exactly. Now, some
have. They don't ever have absolutely 100%.
Yep.
But there's a lot of the homeowners that don't reflect on how they contributed to the burn, because contractors can walk away feeling just as burnt, the degrees of burn on their skin. It's so true. So you're saying the harder type of homeowners to work with are those first at it, but don't have the humility and think they know what it takes.
Might be that HGTV. Yeah. Sometimes it's that.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Well,
they just
HGTV,
think everything, you know.
The worst, right?
What they're doing to us, what they're doing to our industry, I can't handle.
Now, what are you going to do? You're going to retrain them? So what I'm looking for is that humble customer that would be willing to listen to an expert. Now, of course, I got a lot under my belt, and I can prove it, and I can show them the differences. And it used to be Consumer Reports. I dealt with that 20 years ago and 25 years ago. But Consumer Reports says you got to do it this way or it's got to be this painted.
Yeah.
Hold it. Did you read the question that they asked in the survey that the consumer, and I would pick it apart. So if they would show me the article, I could pick it apart and say, well, that's not fair. Comparing Behr to Sherwin-Williams, that's not a fair comparison. Of course, theirs is cheaper. They sell to everybody. I get Sherwin-Williams for like half that price. For the cost effectiveness and stuff like that. So that customer can be tricky if they're not humble and they're just rigid. I want this done and I expect it done tomorrow because they didn't know there was a television lapse in there or time lapse in the television show.
Yeah.
You know, we did
Randy, I try to say for in my qualifying process, I'm looking for a homeowner who is looking for a partner, right?
Yeah.
Who is looking to dance, not like a dance is a flow and they're in a partnership. There are two ideas and there's reciprocation. There's back and forth. That is our ideal client. If you're looking for a partner, if you're looking for somebody to tell what to do and tell them how to do it and when to do it and what, like I kindly say, no, thank you. That doesn't work well because there's, Randy, you have so much value. A lot of people in our industry have so much to offer. And when you're being met with so much contentious nature, it's just, it makes the job that much harder. You couldn't pay me enough money. There's not enough contingency in that estimate to work with a homeowner that just knows it all and wants to be able to call me on Sunday.
To Randy's point, I mean, between television and I won't go as far as naming the network, but between television and YouTube and just the general idea in society right now that everything has to be fast, quick, and in a hurry. You know, it's hard to compete with that sometimes. And I think that, you know, getting people to slow down a little bit helps for sure.
Mike, it's hard to compete. And, you know, for certain contractors, you just have to not want to compete. Like if we have homeowners that think that they can do it for X plus Y, they should spend the time going finding that or doing it themselves. I do not need to be a part of the solution for you. You have it all figured out. I do not need to be here.
Exactly.
So it's just gracefully bowing out. And it goes back to that point of like, we don't have to take every project. Like we don't have to say yes to everything. I want to work for however much I need to work and then go off and be with my family of eight plus one. Like Randy, that's really important. Client relations is a big deal.
And back to my original my question, I think kind of got us down this was, you know, how did you survive when everybody else is underbidding you? And I mean, again, I've done 200 of these. After the first 20 minutes that we spoke, I knew what the answer was going to be to that, but I just like hearing it being said, but because I don't like to assume, but I knew that it was because you guys picked the right clients and ones that valued what you do and you were able to charge what you needed to charge to stay profitable and being able to grow and do all those other things. Yep. Whereas it would have been very easy. And there are plenty of contractors who get into tough times, start just undercutting everything to grow that top line and think that's going to answer the problem. But at the end of the day, that creates a lot of mess between the middle part. And when you get to the bottom line, you end up in the red. And so that's back to just kind of full circle on all of it. I mean, that's where it helps you, I'm sure.
Really. And what you're kind of talking about is what's your growth? Oh, I want to grow every year. Grow what? I want to grow profitability.
Right.
I don't necessarily want to grow sales. I want to go, we're doing 1.6 million. I'll be honest. I'm going to share my number here. We're doing 1.6 million, 13% net profit. Okay.
I'm already paid. Yeah.
I'm already paid a very good salary.
I think most contractors are lucky to get five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think most contractors have no idea what that number is.
100%. Right.
I think most contractors don't know what, and they're
selling
power
to outrun that number.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever the bank account is. No.
Yeah.
And so we have fun with
that. Look, I think the message for anyone listening, if you don't know your numbers, it's time to know your numbers. Yeah. Whether you're 6 months into your business, 10 years into this business, there's no shame. Take the time to either do it yourself or better yet, the reason you haven't done it, if you haven't done it at whatever point in your business, is because you haven't subbed that out to somebody. Find the bookkeeper.
Right.
Find the accountant. Find somebody who that is their expertise. If your expertise is in the construction part of it or the sales part of it, find the partner who can own that part of your business. You shouldn't have to do everything in your business, but knowing what your numbers are is so important so that you're growing in the right way.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, 100%. I don't do the bookkeeping. I have people that I trust to do. Monica's out there right now. She just ran payroll, our 2-week payroll right there, everything, because that has to do with job costing coming back to the numbers that I want. I'm more concerned with the job costing numbers than I am with payroll. Let her work that out. Yeah. My CPA does taxes. So to your point, if you're a younger contractor, you want to put good people around you. You got to have a team around you. And so is it too loud? The guys are coming in. I got to get my phone.
It makes it real.
Okay. It's 2 o'clock. The crew's in 6 to 2, straight 8.
There you go.
They go home at 2 o'clock.
Ooh,
it's 100
like
degrees
a machine.
Out.
Like a machine, Randy.
Yeah, exactly. And go home and go rest up so you're good for the next day without heat stroke.
Right.
Awesome.
And so what was I talking about there? I just lost it.
System. Surround yourself by good people. Yep. Surround yourself with good professionals who are going to support your business.
Right. So I kind of started building my stuff, and then I came across the PCA, a trade association. Join your trade association. NARI for remodelers, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, get into those. The PCA is excellent.
Why?
There's commercial. So
why,
this
Randy?
Is where I interfaced with contractors. At first I was reading the magazine for years, you know, and there was great people in the magazines and what have you. Now we have webinars and podcasts. You can do all kinds of things. Heck, if you're a painter, go on to the PCA and go get I can't think of their app right now with all the podcasts and stuff like that. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal, the stuff that you can learn. You know, I did it by magazines, and then I started going to the conferences. So I did that, and now you're interfacing with other contractors around the country. And now we go to these conferences. We open up our laptops, or actually now it's a tablet, you know. And now we open up the tablet, and we say, here's our numbers. Where do you think I'm on? Or, you know, here's how I'm doing in my numbers. Where are yours comparable? And they'll share it because they're on the other side of the country. Now, I can't do it by local contractors. You know, painters and these, you know, tradesmen are still too tight there. You know, they're still worried about, you know, training somebody and letting them go to their you're raising the industry. Train them. Who cares if they go to another contractor? Yeah. You're raising the industry. Keep training over. Pay them well enough so they don't leave.
If you're a painter, you should be you should engage with the PCA.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
If you're a painter, that's the Association for Painters. So exactly. I'm throwing that nugget out. If you're a painter and you're listening to this, Google PCA and become a part of the association. I'm also going to shout out to PCA. If you would like to sponsor this podcast, so you want to be a contractor, feel free to drop us a DM.
So the other thing I do and so there's other groups to get around too. Now, I know I'm not big on BNI itself, but there's executive ownership groups. I'm a part of what's called MAE, Metropolitan Association of Business Executives. And so more like a brainstorming, what's the other one called? There's other groups. They can be expensive. This one's real cheap. Great group of owners. We're about 40 strong. We got like 25 to 30 in the room all the time, once a week, Wednesday mornings. And that's wonderful. Now, this is other industries too. Summer trades, not that many. But you're kicking around ideas. I'm going, you run your business that way? Oh, maybe I could incorporate that system into mine or, you know. And so now I got referrals for bookkeepers. I got referrals. I can call the bookkeeper there and ask her any question I want. If I don't trust my CPA or I want a second opinion, I've got roofers there. I got AC guys there. I'm learning from their businesses and how they're doing. So get yourself around business.
I did BNI for years. Yep. I did BNI for years. But I think one of the big takeaways that I'm here that I want to pull from in what you're saying is for anyone in our industry, get from be either behind the truck or behind your desk and start to engage with other people in your community. Surround yourself with like-minded individuals who will elevate your thinking. Like that was a really big, one of the big things that I did early on that changed the face of my business because I was spending all my time, you know, talking to people, doing things behind the computer. And that's very important. It was very useful as well. But there's something to face-to-face connection, even in today's day of like everyone stay home. Yeah. Get from behind your desk or from behind your truck and start to connect, whether it's a BNI, a networking group, a Toastmasters, whatever it is, so that you're engaged with other people who are going to give you ideas that you're not getting by sitting behind your desk.
Well, part of that is not being scared either, right? I feel like there's, especially in the construction space, a lot of the owners are pretty tight on a lot of stuff, especially the ones that I meet at least, right, are pretty closed off. And it's the ones that are willing to get out there and not only show what they're doing, but also be able to learn and receive new ideas are the ones that are being a little bit more successful, in my opinion.
Really, here's how I term it. Now, let me term it two different ways. As a business owner, you know, in my experience, I'm going to share what I know. I want the whole industry to come up. That's why this podcast is here. You guys are trying to improve the industry, or not improve it, but you're trying to offer to the industry so that other people can improve. So you're serving the community. That's our theme here. That's part of our mission. That's our biggest part of our mission. That's our key word around here. Everybody throughout this company, 12 field painters, you know, 6 people staffing here, is we serve our customers. We make it easy for them to do their jobs. I make it easy for my employees to do their job also. My employees are just as important as my customers. And I tell them that, and I show them that. And so that's very important. You know, I'm all about culture, and I have been for decades, you know, building that culture up. And so we have to. But maybe let me put it in a different term. When I start giving back to the community, the PCA, and teach classes for them, and right now we're actually training ex-cons coming out of prison. They come out of prison, go into a 90-day program, and then we're on our sixth 4-week class, sixth group of 4 weeks long. We teach them in a classroom 2 days a week, and then on the weekend, they do 2 8-hour in-house training or on-the-job training. This program is unbelievable. There's 350 ex-cons in this.
What's the name of the program?
It's called New Freedom. Phenomenal.
I love
that. They have a 97%,
is that,
97% non-recidivism rate. Awesome.
Wait, Randy, is that a group that's specific to Mesa, Arizona? Or is that
to Phoenix, right? Phoenix right now. They might have expanded a little past that. I'm not sure. It's pretty much Phoenix right now. It's a program. It's been in the prison for a while. They actually have groups that go in the prison, talk to people, and see if they want to choose this program. It's really a mental health program for 90 days. So they're doing tons of counseling, tons of change that nugget, and get them thinking. And then we go in there for 4 weeks, and we train them to be employable. Some of these guys have never worked a normal job. They don't know how to be an employee. You know, we drill them with 10 minutes early. You should, John, that's another painter, a good friend of mine up in Phoenix. It's his lead on this. It's so funny. But we go through all kinds of things. What a fantastic program.
Were you asked to be in that, or is that something you sought out?
John kind of ran into it, and then he had a labor problem. Right? We all had labor problems. We don't have a labor problem right now anymore. Ugh. And the contractors that are involved with this, they do the training. You know, I go there on Wednesday evenings and I help teach the class and set them straight. We got 120 people in the ring that we're training. Now, some of them are graduates and they haven't graduated from the 90-day program yet. So they're there witnessing and saying and helping us. My crews that I've hired, the three guys that I hired, I actually had four. We had one guy fell asleep on the job, on the driveway. Okay. He went back
doesn't
to drugs.
Doesn't always win.
Yeah, and drug use. Okay. You know, most of them are drug use, so they got to break that. And so is it perfect? No. Can you send them into an occupied home? You know, I have trouble with that too. You know what I mean? I got to be careful with that because they are felons.
Yeah.
But if we can work around that, and we have ways, I'm not going to talk about that. But it's just a fantastic thing to give these guys and gals actually right now. It's still co-ed. They're actually changing that. They bought another hotel up the road for the women to go through, but they had to separate them. It's just not, there's too many problems happening. Yep. And so just that. And then we hire them for $18 an hour. They might not have a license, no more, no less. We have to hire them for that. We have to hire them legally. So they have to be legal contractors. They can't be off the books. They have to be legal contractors. And then, we got a ton of contractors teaching them on weekends and on weekdays, and then they hire them for $18 an hour, and then they go up from there. All right. And so we've had
Randy, I'm hearing two, I'm going to pull two things out of there. Where you started on this part of our conversation was serving your community.
Yes.
Right. And going into it with that heart of serving your community, you also found a solution to a problem that everyone in our industry, in every industry, is these labor shortages. I don't know if you went in with that heart, with that intent, like expecting to receive that on the other side, but going into any situation with the right heart of service, man, it's really impressive what you come out on the other side of that.
Exactly. I mean,
that's really cool.
I serve the community, and that's our major mission statement, right? But I'm still here to make profit. It's just a tiny second behind that. That's all. It's just
not
first.
You got 8 kids, Randy. I understand.
And so when you serve the community.
You got grandkids.
You know, Dave Ramsey, that's another podcast I listen to. That's another influence that I've had over decades is Entree Leadership. Yes. Sign up for that podcast or their consulting services too. They're going to help point you in the right direction and help you think about systems and processes with people in mind first, of course. But, you know, just thinking about how to serve others like that, it's and how they teach it is, serving your profit is the reward for serving people well. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's going to come. Like Mike was saying, right, Mike? That's how I kept my customers going or how I kept the business going through the downturn and everything else. And so we serve our customers well. Profit is going to come from that. Now, I teach that in a culture all the way down into my crews, into my staff here. And now I'm teaching it at New Freedom. You know, do the next right thing. To be the best version of yourself and do the next right thing all the time. Now, we all have bad days, and that's okay. Forgiveness is key, right? You know, and we're going to give a lot of chances. We probably keep people on too long sometimes.
That happens sometimes. Yep. It's easy.
Yep.
It is. So before we get into Marcello's favorite section of the rapid fire, I want to chat about marketing real quick. Just because I know that in this space, there are many different levels of branding and marketing, and I just like to know kind of where everybody is on that. While we've been here, I'm kind of looking you guys up and not seeing a lot, but I guess doing work, obviously in the association space, maybe, you know, something like Instagram or YouTube or Facebook isn't as necessary, but it sounds like you guys do a lot on the residential side too. So what are you doing from a marketing and branding standpoint to make sure that people know who you are and are, you know, whether they're coming to you or are saying yes because they can find you somewhere and know a little bit more about you before they say yes?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. So, you know, let's talk about the different segments of our business. So we do everything repaid, about 50%, maybe a little less. Actually, this year, I haven't looked up the numbers yet, is residential, interior, exterior, everything repaint. No new construction, barely work for any contractors. We do occasionally, but pretty rare. The other portions are HOA. It's probably, that's the other 40% and about 10% in the commercial repaint. So office warehouses, retail, and executive suites type thing, mostly exterior on the commercial. HOA is all exterior too, unless we do the interior of a clubhouse or something like that. And so in the residential marketing, you're starting to see stuff. We're just stepping into, here's my goal. Well, our first marketing is branding and doing the right job. It's all word of mouth. We're blessed. I mean, even with 350 customers a year, we get our best is, of course, treat our customers super well, get, you know, newsletters out to them, get them, you know, remind them that we're here. So word of mouth, you know, previous customers, that's our biggest.
I was going to say real quick, that's probably one of the one of the main positives is having that many customers, right? I mean, that's a headache for sure, but
it snowballs.
If it's a numbers game as far as referrals, I mean, rather than doing five jobs for $1.6 million in a year, if you do 350, you got a much better shot of more people referring you guys.
Make those clients raving fans and right it spreads there. Like a little wildfire. Yeah.
I want their whole family's paint job. I don't just want their paint job. And we started that 20 years ago. I figured that out. And it really goes with our, when our quality went down, that's what I want. I want lifelong customers. Now, people don't paint all that often, but actually they do. They'll change things in 2 to 3 years. Right now, we're doing paintiversary, we called it, paintiversary postcards. We're sending them all out to our 8, 9, and 10-year-ago customers.
That's brilliant.
Because amazing. We do such a good paint job, it lasts 10 years, right? We're aiming for a 10-year paint job. We're not aiming for a 4 or 5-year paint job. That's the type of customer we want, right?
That's great.
They want to do it right the first time. They want it the last. That's what we sell. Does it cost more?
Yeah.
But we sell that.
Yeah.
And so now I'm sending out cards. We call it the paintiversary cards, cute little that's postcard smart. Yeah, to those, not to the people, to the addresses that we painted. We painted your house 10 years ago or 9 years.
You may not have been there, but we did.
You're right.
Super smart.
Is it holding up? You know? Yeah. You know? But anyways.
Really smart.
So that's that marketing. And so we just started into my goal, and especially the residential marketing, is to make us recession proof. That's my only goal with marketing. Right. I have enough jobs coming in. I'm 2 months out right now. I've been 2 months out for 2, 3 years, even through COVID, everything else. We've been flying around here. I couldn't get enough employees to grow fast enough. And I still can't because there's no quality. I don't have craftsmanship. I can't hire craftsmanship. I can barely hire 2, 3-year-old experienced painters that think they know it all, but they have a long way to go. So we have great training systems and we're developing. But anyway, so that marketing right now, we just stepped into the PPC realm, you know, SEM, so search engine marketing.
Optimization.
SEM. Yep.
Yeah. The SEO, we've always been doing that here and there. Yep. You know, so we stepped into the PPC. We hired actually a consultant, so a marketing consultant. I tried 3 different ones over the last year and a half. they did pretty good. McKenna was great in the beginning with marketing, you know, internally doing our marketing work. But she left. It's hard to keep them. It's hard to keep them here. So I hired an outside consultant, and then we just do the minor stuff and let them tell us what to do. And it's starting to work. We're just at the beginning. So that's why you're not seeing much out there. We've got a pretty good website. We're building that. You know, we're still building and changing. As far as the HOA and where we market there, we don't market to commercial right now. I've had a great couple of customers, the big property management companies for the commercial for years. They're a pain in the butt. I don't want to expand in that area yet. I don't have what I need to do it. And we can talk about that a different time. But the HOA I go after, we're part of their trade groups. We put on trade shows for the managers. They get a day off. We just did one a couple of weeks ago and got 350 cards, business cards. And now we're marketing to them, newsletters, LinkedIn, following up with the conversations that we had there. I've got three or four leads coming out of that. Now it costs us $2,000 to go to that show. It costs us $1,600 a year to join that trade, or I'm sorry, that association. And we're part of two of them, CAI, this one's called AACM. They're a great group of managers, and they go to training and stuff like that. So they have monthly meetings also that we can be involved. So there's how, you know, there's the marketing.
There's a lot of the old school stuff, which I love.
It's the old school stuff. It's super cool. And there's a lot of value in that. And there's a leg of your marketing that is face-to-face marketing. And that is
a lost art.
Old school method, but it's a lost art. I think there's so much value in that. Like, that is how you build lifelong clients.
Exactly.
From the start, right?
Now, when we submit bids, when we get on the other thing of marketing, if anybody's interested, if you go to the PCA, I don't know if you guys, I don't know if you have to be a member to get access to the videos, but I did one on HOA, how to go after HOA business, about an hour long webinar type thing. And it's very wordy if you can get to it. It's got to be about 4 years old now, but it talks about how to get in there and what to do once you're in there. It's a different ballgame when you're dealing with managers. Because I'm dealing with the manager, but they don't make the decisions. The board members make the decisions that are behind them. And I can't get to the board members unless I got a beautiful proposal with photos and notes with arrows and serving my customers through the manager, serving what the board needs, the board of directors needs. Now, I haven't even met them. I can't even do a disc profile on them. I don't know if they're detailed. I don't know if they're, you know, interactual, you know, that type of thing. I go to board meetings occasionally, only about one or two a year. I can't get in then. They won't allow me in. If I could get in there, I can do a lot better, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I've got to do it through the manager. And so I serve the daylights out of the manager, make her, like most of her teams, make her job easier to help the board make their decision. And that's how we serve them. So that's all snowballing right now. Now, they tell their fellow managers, oh, yeah, have him get a bid. I don't care if he's expensive or not. He's going to teach the board
or they move to a different company, right? Like they go from one management company to another. And and you've got the relationships.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it takes time. This is all takes time, right? And so
all of it takes time, but you also have different legs, which I think is really important because I think another thing that is pretty consistent throughout our industry is that we all lean on the word of mouth too hard. So having different channels for your marketing is really, really important.
Yep.
And I really, one of the big takeaways is the value of being in front of people and being in the community in that way. That's great.
So before we wrap up, let's do rapid fire.
Oh, wrap up. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we do this whole segment. Marticella Brig brought this on. This is one of her many additions to this podcast, but it's been great. And so this is fun to do before we finish for sure.
Yes. Because we want to be a resource. This isn't just about storytelling. This is a way to help others grow. We came up with this little segment, just questions, Q&A. What are things that serve you that, you know, could be a resource? I like listening to podcasts where I grow from. And I'm like, huh, I didn't think about that. I'm going to go try that. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions and just give me what you got. What's the one resource your business cannot do without?
Cool.
What's the one resource your business cannot do without?
Can't be a person or the internet.
Not the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to say Yeah, it's really just the podcasting and connecting with people smarter than me, really, is what it is.
So you're it's networking, connecting right?
other people. Yeah, the networking. Yeah. I'm going to say networking, and that's a wide range. You know, it goes all over the place. You know, even including the HOA managers. When I talk to them, holy cow, I'm learning a whole bunch about them and their business, and it helps me.
Yeah.
And so I would say definitely
if you're out there listening, search BNI, search your whatever city you're in, search for trades associations, get out there and get in front of your community.
And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to share a little. People aren't going to steal your business. There's enough building.
Sure.
We're going back to painting, right? There's enough buildings to paint for all of us. We don't need to be hoarding our paint jobs, right? Like share, grow, learn.
It all the time. If next time you fly, hopefully it's not cloudy or something when you're taking off. I just look over the city and go, oh my God, if I don't have enough work, it's my own fault.
Right.
Look at all those dwellings out there.
The number one resource you cannot live without is networking. Get out there and network. Number two, what's the best advice someone has given you?
Man, there's been a lot of them. There's a great guy that just sold his business. He was a water softening, conditioning, what do they call that, business, and he just sold it. And what did he tell me? Because I asked the question, he said, figure out how to measure your business growth. In other words, not just by dollars, especially right now, because we have inflation. How do I know I actually grew, you know, $100,000?
Hold it. Just charge there more for inflation. The paint that costs more and everything else. Yeah.
So I'm making more money, of course, but inflation, everything's gone up. So he says, you've got to find something to measure it against. And so mine is really field labor. And so I haven't done this whole math, but he really gave me a new idea because I asked that question of him and he looked at me and says, you don't measure against something other than the dollars? And I said, what should I measure against? He says, measure against your gallons. And I said, I have no way to get my gallons into a spreadsheet accurately. And so we might be able to, it would take a lot of work, but I don't have it. For the past, I have nothing to compare it to. I have no way of coming up with that number. I mean, I can ask Sherwin-Williams how many gallons, but we buy it from Home Depot, Sherwin-Williams, Dunn Edwards, you know, from Ben Moore. I have no way to get it in there. So I have to go against my field labor hours. That's the only consistent thing. Hours, not dollars.
I was going to say hours.
And so come up with that percentage. Come up with that rating system. That'll tell me if I'm really, truly growing and not just smart. Inflation. You know, changing the numbers.
Figure out what to measure your business against.
Exactly.
Figure out what to measure your business against. All right. Next question. Is there the last book or podcast that you love?
That's really tickling my fancy right now is Contractor Evolution. Tickle my fancy.
I love that. I love that.
You never heard that? Come on. You guys are too young.
I just haven't heard it. I've been in like 20 years.
I haven't heard it on this podcast or from anyone in the contractor space. It's not.
But you're fancy. Great, Randy.
That was perfect. That was awesome.
You should see me unveil and embarrass my 14-year-old.
I lost what you said after that, though. What was the name of the podcast?
I heard nothing behind Tickle My Fancy. What was the book?
I think it was a podcast, right?
Contractor Evolution. It's a podcast. It's a group out of Canada, actually.
These guys come through the PCA.
They're highly involved with the PCA, too. But they are just nailing it on the podcast on all kinds of different subjects. Every time I listen to them, it's just like, wow, look at that nugget. You know, you kind of talked about it, Maricela. You know, listen to that nugget. And so you should see my OneNote. I do OneNote for note keeping. I'll be driving and doing voiceover, you know, voice messaging to myself. Write this down, Randy, you know, and these nuggets. Or I'll pull off to the side of the road and listen to the podcast and take all these notes. That non-trade leadership, too. A little less recently, but the Contractor Evolution, just phenomenal. These guys are nailing, absolutely nailing it. And
Contractor Evolution.
Yeah, very good for general contractors, too, and all kinds of trades. It's just phenomenal.
Cool. Awesome. Writing that down. And last, you know, you're a father, you're a grandfather, you're a business owner, you're a multi-generation. Like there's a lot of who you are. What is one habit that you have just for you that helps that where you pour into yourself so you can pour into others? What is one habit that you remain so that you are the best in all the things that you are?
Wow. Really, I'm going to bring it into a spiritual sense right now. I mean, it's really just my love of God and love of the truth. I could say it that way. I depend on God and turn things over. I surrender, you know, as a business owner and family member, you know, and all kinds of things swirling around me. Sometimes I leave, you know, one event to go to the next and just sit, look up and say, what's next, Lord? You better give me the strength. Because yeah. I'm running out right now. And then all of a sudden, boom, I got that strength and boom. So I have a strong love of God. I have a strong knowledge that God loves me. And so that faith yeah. takes me a long way. I can step into serving people. I can step into serving my wife as soon as I get home, you know, that whole thing. And so yeah. I think that's answering your question, but it's really being able to have something bigger than me that helps me, Amen. You know, go over to New Freedom and teach these guys. Now, I lost my son, he was 33-year-old, about a year and 2 months ago, to fentanyl. Adam was a prison bird, in and out of prison for 10 years, and I lost him. He worked for the company, and just before that, he was out of prison and died of fentanyl. And it, you know, never could get unhooked off the drugs and what have you. And so just that next step and go serve and speak to that. God is giving me that to work with these guys at New Freedom now, because the chances of them taking one of those blue pills, and if you know anybody taking those blue pills at all, the chances of them dying is very close to 100%, believe it or not. It's terrible out there. It's unbelievable. And so what can we do about it? And so I'm trying to hit that. That's one of the reasons you kind of asked that, Mary Sol. You know, why am I over there doing that? Now I'm serving the painting community. Mike, you kind of spoke to that. You know, am I serving myself by just hiring these guys? No, I'm serving the community.
But you're
I'm
clearly doing it for a bigger purpose.
And yes. Yeah. It's to really give back. These guys need it. Thank you. And so it's tough, but I can witness to these guys. I know what it's like to be in prison somewhat. I've never been in myself, but I knew what my son went through. So I know what they went through. So I can share that story and I can give them this hope. And then if I can give them a job or show them how to, you know, that the respect that I'm giving them.
I was going to say, you're connecting with them respected. On so many different levels that you almost are guaranteed to earn their respect, right? Because you're not coming in from one angle of just serving yourself and serving the painting community. You're also coming in knowing what they've been through, what their future could be. And so you're rounding it out for them on all sides and able to connect with them on so many different levels. So I think, I know I asked earlier, did you seek that out or find you? And I mean, and if we're speaking spiritually, it definitely found you and it found you for a purpose. And I think what you're doing there is amazing.
So no fear.
That gave me chills.
Yeah. Mike, you said it a few times. Have no fear. Step into these things.
Yep.
We have to have a fullness of life. I'm after a fullness of life. You know, they say, you know, I want to be sliding into home base when I go into heaven, dirty, bloody, and everything else, sliding in the hole. It's going to be a full charge.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Wow. I love that.
Wow. That gave me chills. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, I'm sitting behind the screen, but I could feel your spirit throughout this conversation. And that's a testament to that relationship that with your creator. You are a pioneer. You are an entrepreneur and you are a servant. And I am so glad that I got the time to get to spend with you today.
Awesome. Yeah, Randy, this has been great, man. We appreciate it. Before we go, we want to give you an opportunity to let people know where to find you, how to get a hold of you, if that's something you want to do, or just how they can get in touch with you guys. And whether it's from a service standpoint.
Tell us what your website is.
Whatever they can do.
Yeah, you're welcome to contact me. If I stirred anything in anybody, feel free to contact me. I love to share. I will take the time to share business, personal things. How did you get through that? How do you forgive? You know, even things like that. I'd be glad to share. If you're in need, let me know. MTS Painting. So, you know, www, we all know that. MTSpainting.com. If you shoot me an email, you know, off the top there, you can call me too off that number. It is a call rail number though and stuff like that. But you can shoot. I don't think we have our actual emails on there, but you're welcome to send Randy at mtspainting.com. You're welcome to send me a straight up. But if you call the office or send an email to that, I think it's MTS at mtspainting up on top. If you send that, it will get to me. I have a great staff. They know who it's going to be meant for. And so, yeah, feel free to contact me. Glad to help with anybody, anything.
Well, Ray, yeah, you are the epitome of why we do this. So I appreciate you taking the time with us. This has been awesome. Yeah, and
you
we
guys
look
are
forward
doing
to staying connected with you for sure and seeing what the future holds for you guys. We appreciate it.
Thank Sounds you, good. Andy.
All right. Thank you. God bless you.
Have a good one. Stay safe.
God bless you.
Okay, bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Want to Be a Contractor.